the wrong place.
It's the wrong time of day.
Turn the gavel over to Vic's table, Senate Bill 1 and 2, set them by committee on tables. I think it may have been, in order to come up here and take a shot, you better...
What bills are they, John?
Oh, yes. Senate Bill 582.
All right, let's start with that.
Slick? No?
No, the old... Boy, I know, chew that money.
You told me.
Set upside down, that makes much difference to me, I guess.
Well, it's feeding the bill.
Yes. This bill would take from the current limitations on garnishment an exception of attorney's fees and costs awarded in domestic relations suit. There presently is an exception in the law allowing garnishment to a greater extent than usual for investigations involving welfare of children, for child support. And this bill adds to the thing that I mentioned, two things. One would allow attorney's fees to be, in collecting child support or in a domestic relations matter, to be treated like the child support itself and not subject to the limitations on garnishment. And the second is that if there's an investigation where an attorney has been appointed as counsel for a child in a domestic relations suit and they're investigating the welfare of the child, then the fees in that case are also not subject to the limitation on garnishment that generally obtains. Let me try to say that forward instead of backward. Years ago, there weren't any limitations on garnishment except something like half the guy's wages in the last 30 days. In recent years, there's been a real cut down on how much you can garnish at any given time, so that it's a small percentage of a man's wages that can be garnished at a given time. There is now in the law an exception allowing more garnishment if you're after child support. This bill would expand that exception to allow more garnishment for attorney's fees in a domestic relations matter, and especially for attorney's fees for the attorney who was appointed by the court to investigate, or who was otherwise employed to investigate, the welfare of a child in a domestic relations suit. We now have the situation where the child can be represented separately from the parents. I don't know whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, but it's the law, and you can have it. Child may want to have a separate investigation made different than either of the parents would do. This would allow those attorneys to be...
The bone's office.
Or maybe 18 when we get done with this session, but 21 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a hard bill to read.
This is the most difficult of the bills to start with, but then that's all right.
I say it's a hard bill to read because the only changes are different ROS references.
Yes, that's right.
ROS. That's Ross. I mean Ors.
Respond on summary.
Was this designed that our attorneys having more difficulty getting certain types of collections than others? It's a collection bill, obviously.
Well, the people who are entitled to support are having more difficulty getting it because you can garnish for the support, you can't garnish for the attorney's fees to get it. Suppose a lady got a divorce 2 years ago and everything was all right then, and she got $100 a month for each of the two children, and then the husband goes out and gets married to someone else and gets a new family and new obligations, and the new wife gets the first crack at his paycheck. Well, she goes to an attorney, and the attorney says, oh, you've got to pay me to do this. And she says, I'm sorry, I don't have any money except the child support, and he's not paying the child support, and that's why I'm in here to see
him.
So the attorney doesn't know how he's going to get paid. He does know that even if the court awards him attorney's fees in a contempt proceeding against the father to make him pay the support that he was always ordered to pay, that he can't garnish to get him. Yes, it's an attorney's bill, But primarily, it's a bill that will improve the collection of child support by having a way for it to be paid for. The district attorneys really can't do all this, and unless the old lady's on welfare, they shouldn't.
Then, Ms. Smith.
Then I assume that there's no limitation in this bill, assuming that the court ordered reasonable attorney fees, it could consume all of the money's worth. In other words, there's no limitation on the amount to be garnished by attorney's fees. Is that correct?
That would be true, provided the attorney's fees were provided for in an order of the court, which included support of any person and attorney's fees together. It would have to be an order of a court. It would have to be an order for support, which included attorney's fees. But in that instance, there's no limitation.
How is he going to feed his other family then?
You want to answer that?
No better than if he paid the support in the first place. We adopt a policy which is arbitrary, and that is that he must provide for the support of the first family first.
Is there no better way to take care of the situation which you spoke of? And this is rampant. It's society ought to be ashamed of itself, where a person is awarded a child subsistence from a man, and then he marries again, and or never does pay whether he gets married or not. And the enforcement is very difficult. Is there no better way than this route? This is a Band-Aid route, I realize, best, I'm sure.
I don't think of any better way to enforce it than to make it possible for the wife to obtain a proceeding in court. The other solution for the woman is to wait till she's broken up, she can go on welfare, and then the DA has to do it 7 or 8 months too late. It isn't a very satisfactory solution. It's much more costly than this kind of a bill would be.
Wouldn't the attorney's fee be a substantial percentage of the first year's payment?
Probably
not.
Be pretty typically there, unless you had a knockdown, drag out trial all day or 2 days. Pretty typically, $100 to $150. Not that much. There are two or three other bills you'd like me to testify about.
Just a minute,
excuse
please.
Me. I'm sorry.
Further questions? Would anybody care to make motion on this bill? Senator Smith moves out. 582. You pass. Discussion.
Hey, Mr. DeWitt, have checked out the references here?
Yes, he's gone through it quite thoroughly.
I'm not going to carry it.
Senator Fadley is going to carry it. Further discussion? Clerk call the roll.
Senator Kiefer.
Aye.
Senator Ivers.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Senator Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
And, we had a hearing on this before at Bill 582.
Which has been set for hearing, but we haven't heard.
I thought we had a hearing. We had testimony on
April 10th. 11th.
Next bill, John.
Senate Bill 554.
This is in the order you have them. It, again, is a more difficult. I have two other little bills I hope coming after this. This bill covers two statutes it has been held in some of the lower courts in the state, but not all of them, that the statute is unconstitutional. I submitted it at the request of an attorney by the name of Dean Kaufman, and I hope that you have received separately from me copies of letters he has written. He wrote me a letter. I tried to distribute the letter.
Be in your folder here.
Well, that depends on whether my people did their work properly, not whether the committee clerk did. I did try to get it up here. You have a copy of the letters.
We have copies of letters from Richard Owens, an attorney in Eugene, and also Leslie Swanson.
All right, there's two other guys that he got that wrote. The first section of the bill deletes a very ambiguous, broad provision of the statute on harassment. which has been held to be overbroad in some of the lower courts in the state. Just gets rid of it. Law presently reads, you commit a misdemeanor if you engage in a course of conduct that alarms or seriously annoys another person and which serves no legitimate purpose. I don't know whether that's singing under the lamppost at night when they want to sleep, or whether it's calling somebody three times on the phone instead of just once, or what seriously annoys me might not annoy someone else at all. I think if a fellow followed me down the street whistling all the time, I'd be seriously annoyed, but if he followed some girl, it might not annoy her at all. It's hard to tell. What I'm trying to do is to point out that the ambiguous nature or the vague nature of the language, it depends almost entirely on the reaction of the other person, and you really can't tell what's covered. I say that another way, the disorderly conduct statute and the rest of this harassment statute seems to cover everything you want to anyway. So it won't leave a hole in the law, but it will prevent charges from being made under that.
Questions of Senator Faber.
The other part of it. Madam Chairman,
the other part of it is to separate them so that remaining at a certain place by itself will not be an offense, but you would have to either maintain a place where drugs were used, or else you would have to frequent that place. But staying there, remaining, I don't know how long remains is, I don't even know what remains means.
Frequent
means you go there more than once, so I would say.
There are the courts that have used the dictionary definition of that way.
Yeah. And the remains is a real questionable validity for a charge. I'm not as proud of that part of it as I am the other part of the bill. The first part of the bill, I'm pretty sure, is unconstitutional. The second part of the bill, it's difficult to tell what the statute means.
Questions? What's the next bill, son?
Senate Bill 791.
There was a United States Supreme Court decision about 2.5 or 3 years ago called the Snyde Act case, which arose in Wisconsin. Under that case, it was held that you could not garnish by writ of attachment before there was a judgment. 791. If you sued somebody and you didn't have a judgment yet, you couldn't garnish unless there was a hearing to determine some validity of your claim. You wouldn't finally determine it, but it would see whether you had some validity of your claim. Oregon statute does not provide for that hearing presently, being an old statute that came before the U.S. Supreme Court decision. The result is that many of the judges will not allow any garnishment before judgment at all, because the Supreme Court says you've got to have a hearing, and the statute doesn't allow a hearing. Therefore, doesn't provide for a hearing. An attachment is contrary to common law, and therefore has to be strictly construed under the statute.
Didn't we pass this through the Senate last time?
We may have.
Questions?
Well, wait a minute. We're talking about a garnishment here, not a tax.
Well, it would be a garnishment before, it is limited to garnishment, but it would be before judgment.
Well, I thought, did they call that a garnishment?
Yeah, when you go out and get, you can garnish under writ of attachment. There are two kinds of writs.
Okay, all right, okay.
Garnishment execution after and one attachment before. Garnishment means go get personal property or money, primarily money.
I was thinking the writ of attachment, thinking that's the word they should be using.
So if you had a case that was pending for 8 or 9 months, you couldn't protect yourself, even though the guy had assets there and you had a good case, because there's no provision for a hearing, and the Supreme Court says you could have one.
Senator White?
Well, I have two questions. First, I'd like to know the significance of the word principal on line 8. For the principal defendant, what's the degree of defendants in a garnishment case?
Well, that's the guy that you claimed owed the money. Yeah.
And who are the rest of them? And who are?
It's possible under the statutes to end up with a bank or the the boss, the employer, being a defendant, if he tells you that there's no money due when there is
some. I see. This is the debtor, then.
Yeah, that's the debtor. That's right.
And then, about this hearing business, I don't quite get the point of a hearing and then a judgment later on. What's the purpose of the hearing?
Well, the hearing would be much less in formality than the main trial would be. And the purpose of the hearing is to comply with the Supreme Court's decision that you can't hold money to pay the judgment before the judgment, unless you have a hearing.
A lot of times there'd be no sense of having a lawsuit because any chance of collecting would be gone by the time you have the lawsuit.
Yes, I understand that. Well, ordinarily, when you garnish a guy's wages, do you have to have a lawsuit besides? As long as you have a legitimate claim?
If he contests it.
Oh, I see. In the case of contested afterwards.
In other words, the guy knows damn well he owes the money. That's one of the possibilities. The other possibility is he doesn't think he owes it. But generally, he knows damn well he owes the money. He comes in and, hey, I've been sued on this note for $500. What can you do for me? The lawyer says, for $75, I can file a general denial. And that'll slow it down for 4 or 5 months. And in some courts, maybe a little longer.
How much you charge me? You have to go to judgment.
I feel we're roaming a field here.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to explain to you why it's important that it cuts off the value of the delay when the debt's owed.
Is this touchy subject when you talk about fees? Is that what you mean?
She means you're meddling.
I brought it up.
You can't have my fees. You're my friend.
For the question, but it's an opinion. What's the next bill?
662.
This bill would provide in the bulk transfer law that there be notice to utilities when there's a change in the business. I think that it is good for utilities, and it's especially good for small businessmen who are selling their business. It doesn't fit exactly the theory of the bulk transfer law otherwise, but it just imposes a statutory duty to tell the utility you're getting service from that there is a change in the business. I know of a restaurant that was sold out on West 11th Street in Eugene where the Water and Electric Board never knew that the restaurant was sold, continued to be operated under the same name using the same billboard up above it. After about 2.5 years, the guy who bought it from the original owner left town, and the Water Board wanted to collect all of the 2.5 years electricity that hadn't been paid, some of it had been paid, from the original owner. He'd not used any of it. Likewise, he hadn't told the utility there was a transfer. So the utility was still looking at his name as the one on the meter. It's just Now, when that was sold, there was a compliance with the Bulk Sales Act. But since the guy who was selling it, the original owner, didn't owe them anything, his bill was paid up, their name didn't go on the list. It's sort of an open account, that there may be no balance in the account. This would apply to the telephone company. It would apply to the water and electric, and in some instances, perhaps to the garbage service, if it was a utility in that community. Maybe cable TV, I'm not positive about that.
Questions?
Well, what this done, it does, it just says that even though you don't owe any money, you have to get a list of the utilities that are serving.
Well, whether or not you owe any money, you're going to tell the utility that's hooked up to you that if there's a change, and the meter should be changed from person A to person B.
Yeah.
That protects A and B and the utility.
Questions?
I move SB 662 to defer the UPAT recommendation.
Let me ask a question.
Senator Smith.
Now let's see. Under the bulk sales law, you must notify known creditors.
Yes, but you use a list that the seller provides you. But that's true. He's supposed to tell you everybody that he owes money to, and then you use the list he provides.
Now in the past, utilities could or could not have been a part of that.
Right. If the guy was behind on his bills.
Yes, he would have been. So, in some cases they would qualify, in others they would not
qualify. That's true. And there have been some problems because of that hole there that fell through the crack. the guy selling had paid up his bill, and the guy buying wasn't that good a credit risk.
Well,
the utility would have earned a deposit
right.
out of it.
Okay. I guess my question is, now, let's... I assume, then, that we're singling out utilities that must be notified. What about the case that you bring up?
Welcome, John. Welcome to
which the known purchaser,
this is
or the purchaser was not known, and the man who sold the business created some debts and left town, leaving those debts to the purchaser. In other words, we're identifying utilities, we're not identifying other future creditors. We're singling out utilities.
Yeah, the guy would not have been able to create the debts on the basis of the business as easily as he can with utilities. Because what you're talking about is the transfer of business, not the seller himself. He can go off and do something else. But that guy's going to be protected if he comply with the bulk sales law. The buyer will be protected from those later debts of the seller if he complied with the Bulk Sales Act by mailing out to the provided list of creditors. But he won't get hooked for that.
Well, isn't the man protected who bought the property under your water and electric board question? He's protected, but the point is the water and electric board is not protected mm-hmm. against the man who left town. Is
yes.
that your point?
Well, really the water and electric board isn't protected against the buyer, and the seller is not protected against the buyer.
Well, I assume they couldn't collect from the seller since 2.5 years of
yeah. If the seller's got enough money, they can, but he's no longer got the business. The meter's left in that guy's name because nobody ever said change the meter. So the utility assumes that they're providing a service to a guy that they know, and it may be someone they don't know and would have gotten a deposit from otherwise.
So in answer to my question, you say it's easier for utilities to be hoaxed than it is anybody else.
The continuing every 30-day type of operation, yeah.
Senator White.
I'll pursue this question of Senator Smith. Businesses frequently operate under a trade style.
Yeah.
And they're sold. Now, under the trade style, I don't see that any other creditor wouldn't have the same problem. In terms of, I sell, I pay up my bills, the trade style goes on, the next month the other guy pays it, the bill to the same trade style. It does seem that this is giving somebody a very special consideration that if it's fair, it ought to be given to everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's not just giving the utility the consideration. It's also giving the seller the consideration. And it protects the buyer in the sense of the utility will be notified of the transfer. And if there is a debt owing, contrary to what the seller has told the buyer, if there is a debt owing, then the buyer is going to find out that out from the utility. Now, as far as you're concerned, I don't necessarily disagree with you if they've been doing business with someone else for a long period of time. It's hard for me to write a definition to cover this. If that guy is owed money, suppose that it's a laundry and dry cleaning place that provides uniforms for the waiters and waitresses. If the laundry and dry cleaning place is owed money, Senator, then they should get a notice.
I suppose they're not owed money.
If they're not owed money, they won't get a notice that there's a change in the business.
And it's operating in the same trade style?
Yeah, that's exactly the case I'm talking about, but I can't think of a way to define those other people, although maybe there is a way. Anyone that's customary course of doing business on a 30-day account or an open account or something like that?
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes.
What you're doing, that is you've already got the creditor set taken care of under the bulk sales law.
Right.
What you're doing is jumping into the future and notifying utilities over any other creditor. And your answer to that is because it's easier to take advantage of utilities, isn't it?
That's really true, and I can also define it. The seller really gets hooked, too, because he did sign up on this. See, when you first put the meter in, this bill, 2 or 3 years before, the seller signed a card saying, I promise to pay everything that the gas company delivers or the electric company delivers. And that may not be quite the same on the other.
Pretty close.
You think this would be the benefit of, other than Eugene Water Electric Board, be the benefit of such, Pacific Northwest Bell and so forth?
It will benefit everyone who's a utility, and also will benefit the sellers under a bulk sales act where the seller has paid up.
You forgot that one. Harney County REA.
I assume it would benefit Pacific Northwest Bell, that's why I made the motion, we sent for a due pass recommendation back.
That's why I'm gonna vote yes.
Oh.
It wouldn't hurt Harney County Electric.
There's been a motion to send it to, for a due pass, is there discussion?
Well, I can't vote on it, 'cause I didn't hear it, and I'll have to read the minutes.
Oh, God.
This Senator Faison, I'll vote for it, you know?
Thank you, John.
Clerk Colerole.
Note that in my book.
Senator Keithburn.
Let's call Senator John Bridge.
Aye.
Senator.
Aye.
Senator Ivory.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Senator Smith.
Aye, assigned Senator Faison. Do we have any more?
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
You owe me one, Ed.
At least.
Well, you know, there's a better way to do this than this.
Let's turn to, Senate Bill 853.
Third notice, if you wanna reconsider. Now that he's gone, I'll vote with you.
For some reason, the other one?
I refuse to carry.
No.
Bailey's gonna carry it.
This is one about trial committees, I understand there's an amendment, is that so?
Excuse me, yes, Madam Chairman.
Which one, 712?
No, 853.
That amendment should appear in your packet, I believe, under 853, and it's put forward by Mr. Hamel, and, as well as, John Holloway, the, Executive Director of the Bar.
Do you wanna explain the amendment, please?
The amendment is to be made on page 3, line 5 of the printed bill. And, after the comma, you should insert the following language, the trial counsel for the Oregon State Bar, comma. And I believe what this does is, exempts them from, liability.
Mr. Hamel, do you wanna answer that?
He would permit the trial counsel for the bar to respond to the Supreme Court. For example, we had a case recently that Mr. Holloway called to our attention where the accused, in appealing to the Supreme Court, had the Supreme Court write back to the bar and ask for the trial attorney for the bar to file his writ. And ordinarily, he would not do that. So this would give the trial board, the trial counsel for the bar, or the accused, or any person who is permitted by amicus curiae to appear to file their petition with the Supreme Court.
Questions of Mr. Hamel?
This was not a matter taken up by the committee. It was agreed with Mr. Holloway on the
I move adoption of the pause.
Senator Cavanaugh.
I have a question to ask Lloyd, but after the vote on the
Let me have any objection to the amendment.
Are the amendments in the packet here, Tony?
Yes.
I have no objection.
Amendment is adopted.
Lloyd, Madam Chairman, I'm sympathetic to the increasing workload of the Board of Governors. But it seems to me that the single most important function that the Board of Governors has to perform is that as it relates to discipline. And we're getting involved with lots of other things,
And I'm wondering if it might not be more appropriate for the Board of Governors to be more concerned with delegating the other things rather than the disciplinary proceedings. I talked, Saturday I was in Ontario and talked to three or four lawyers from Pendleton and Mount Hear County who weren't aware of this, but who, when I explained it to them, were concerned about it. And in the last 2 weeks, I've been in both Grants Pass and Medford, and as well as in Portland talking to the lawyer, and there seems to be some discomfiture on the part of the members of the bar that I've talked to about the investiture of new disciplinary responsibilities in appointed people rather than in the elected board. So the question is, was consideration given to delegation of the non-disciplinary duties to people other than the elected board and retention of disciplinary responsibilities with the board?
Well, I think, Senator, the best answer to that is comes from the history of the law. And as you know, the responsibility of the Board of Governors and activities of law have been increasing rather dramatically here in recent years. It's reflected in the increase in staff, increase in bar fees, and things like this. I'm sure that they have explored in various ways of delegating some of these things. I think that my answer has to be that this matter has been considered by at least three state conventions. It has been approved every time. The Board of Governors has specifically endorsed this approach, which I think is it's important to keep in mind that they are retaining the grand jury function. And every complaint, whether it ends up as a formal docketed matter or just an informal matter, which is ultimately dismissed against the attorney, every one of those is reviewed by and approved by the Board of Governors. And their workload has become such, and handling every step along the way, that it's occupying over 80% of their time. And they were pulled, they discussed now for at least 3 years. A specific split of authority here. At what point in the proceeding should they be operating, and beyond which point they should not? It was their decision, approved by the convention, I say three different times, that the board, being elected, should retain the grand jury function to determine whether the complaint is not well taken and ought to be just dismissed, or whether there's sufficient there. In other words, perform the grand jury function sufficient that it ought to go to a hearing. And they want to retain that because they are elected, because they are more sensitive, but beyond that, they think that they are then prejudiced by their prior considerations of it and want it to be handled more objectively.
Well, I think John made a good point about that, but the question that I have is, if they retain the grand jury function, how much of their time is going to be spent on disciplinary matters? Going to cut it in half, and if it cuts it in half to 40%, is it not more important that they be spending 80% of their time on disciplinary matters than on some of the other things?
Well, I guess I have to say that the elected Board of Governors does feel that they should be spending this time. And the bar has approved it. Now, I'm sure you're going to find attorneys sitting around the stage who, reasons of their own will oppose it, but I'm sure that represents the bar.
I think that the consensus at the last bar convention really represents the consensus of the bar.
Well, I think it's been the consensus for three conventions. This same bill was introduced last session in House Bill 1212.
That's all I have, Benny. Thank you. I'm sympathetic, Lloyd. And I'm really agonizing over this because of the personal feedback I'm getting.
What's your pleasure?
I'm moving down.
Senator Hoyt moves Senate Bill.
I'm not prepared to vote affirmative on it today.
Then there aren't the votes to do it, so I would suggest the motion be withdrawn. Senate Bill 820, please. This bill is the one that provides the three-way system, the legal defender, or the private non-profit corporation, or appointed counsel. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Senator Keith Burns moves that it be sent out in accordance with its referral to Ways and Means. Discussion?
I'll vote to send it to Ways and Means.
Clerk, call the roll.
Senator John Burns?
Aye.
Senator Keith Burns?
Aye.
Senator Ivers?
No.
Senator Hoyt?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye. Let's turn in the other book to SJR 33.
I'm sure it's not any fun books to get confused.
You'd be able to operate with this book better if you spent more time in church with those hymn books.
I can't tell a slip book from a snuff book. I'm just that nice a guy.
SJR 33?
Uh-huh. This is the Missouri plan.
Madam Chairman, do we have amendments for this?
John, you've prepared amendments to limit this to statewide office only?
Yes, in your packet there could be two amendments. One was prepared by, or submitted to the committee by Dean Hollis, which simply changes the numerical references to articles of the Constitution. That's simply a housekeeping or a matter of form. The other amendment, entitled Proposed Amendments to SJR 33, would limit the Missouri plan, or the plan in this particular measure, to the selection of judges who have statewide jurisdiction. And there's, beneath the amendments, I've prepared the thing which would show you how Section 1 would look with the amendments.
Move both amendments.
Question.
Senator Smith has moved both amendments. Dean Hollis's, which corrects the constitutional references, and the Second Amendment limits the Missouri plan to statewide office. Is there objection to the amendments?
No.
So ordered. Senator Smith moves Senate Joint Resolution 33 to, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator John Brown?
Aye.
Senator Keith Brown?
No.
Senator Ivers?
No.
Senator Hoyt?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye. Then we have Senate Joint Resolution 26. Maybe we do. I don't.
Yes, it should be in the flick book.
It's not in order.
It's in the flick book. I'll vote aye on that.
I'll be right.
Oh, we passed this out, and what it did, the funds are going to come from the Traffic Safety Committee, as I understand from Bob Davis. They'll be totally federal funds, so it's just a question of amending it to indicate the source from which the funds will come for the study. Amendments have been moved. Is there any objection? Sure.
I'm moving you fast.
Senator Hoyt has moved a due pass on Senate Joint Resolution 26. This is the traffic study one, which would redefine the jurisdiction of both traffic matters and district court discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Keith Barron?
Aye.
Senator Ivers?
Aye.
Senator
Hoyt?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
John Burns, wish to be recording voting yes. Recording. Aye. Here. Yeah, with clean, please. Here. Back to the other book, the Senate Bill 712. Let's see if John Burns is out there. Leslie, this is his bill.
I might explain the amendment. The committee reported this bill out due pass, and there was amendment submitted subsequently which would change the definition of motor vehicle, and it would change it to those motor vehicles purchased primarily for personal, family, or household purposes and not primarily for business or commercial purposes. The reason that this amendment was submitted was that the definition of goods, which also appears in Senate Bill 712, limits that to consumer goods, or goods that are not used for business or commercial purposes. And so in order to make the definition of motor vehicles consistent with the goods that this bill applies to, they've changed, they would like to change that definition. And again, the reason for limiting all of these things to consumer goods is that it's the consumer, evidently, that needs this protection, whereas the person who is purchasing an article for business or commercial purposes does not need the same protection.
Who proposed that amendment?
It's your bill, John.
I know it. Who proposed that amendment?
I think Mr. Edward Lewis and Charlie Williamson submitted it to the committee.
He's with the Guardian Acceptance Corporation.
Well, I'd like to ask Mr. DeWitt a question.
Yes.
If we do not adopt the amendment, the bill will still be effective if it passes, will it not?
Yes. What the difference that you would have, though, is say the bill would apply to goods, which are only consumer goods, but at the same and which expressly excludes goods purchased for commercial or business purposes, and yet it would also apply to motor vehicles regardless of the purpose for which they are purchased. So you have an inconsistency in the articles that it applies to.
But the bill will still work for motor vehicles for a person who's in business?
Sure.
And it won't hurt the goods who are people that are not in business?
Long way. There'll be an inconsistency if you don't have the amendment. There will be a consistency if you do.
Well, what's wrong with the inconsistency as far as the operation of the bill is concerned?
The, I might say that another thing, that this whole bill ties into installment contracts chapter of the existing law, which again applies only to consumer goods. So it, as I, certainly it would work at, left as is, but again you're applying laws to in one situation, articles that are only consumer goods, and in another to motor vehicles that are either consumer or commercial goods.
Charlie, did you wish to make a brief statement?
I think, Senator Hoyt, you might have a situation where a company wants to buy a fleet of trucks, and the seller might work very hard to get a loan from a bank for that company. It might really be do a lot, but the bank wouldn't necessarily want to be subject to those defenses that the buyer might have against the seller of the trucks in that case, in a business case. I would agree. I don't care one way or the other.
Well, if you had a reputable dealer, it wouldn't make any difference.
Right.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, this makes this more palatable in the business community, let's put it that way, right? I'm losing this.
What part of the business community?
Oh, dry cleaners.
Yeah, they buy trucks. They don't sell them.
Boy.
The amendment have been moved that would limit it to consumer goods. Discussion. Clerk call roll.
Senator John Bruce.
Aye.
Senator Keith.
Aye.
Senator Ivers.
Aye.
Senator Blake.
No.
Senator Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
Recast, sir.
Recast the bill. Move it out and get passed.
I haven't had a match since Superman died.
Oh, God. So what do you think of these crazy girls?
This is Jack Kalinowski's bill. We have a bill which you have ready out of subcommittee.
171?
Yeah.
We have ready?
Don't you? You're going to have ready.
We would have ready. Did you do the same thing or something?
There's another bill, 171, which has been assigned to subcommittee, which will be ready on Wednesday, which does the same thing. Is it your pleasure, and Jack agrees with that his concerns have been incorporated into 171. Is it your pleasure to table 184?
I move we table 184.
Clerk call roll.
Anything Jack wants?
Senator John Bruce.
Aye.
Senator Keith Brown.
Aye.
Senator Ivers.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Senator Smith.
Aye.
Senator Chairman. Aye.
So we're going to use health bill, that's all right?
It's 171. But Lowy came in with 25 pages of amendments.
Yeah, that's
Alex. Yeah. Oh, Alex. I thought you said Alex. Yeah.
Right. Hey, I think Keith is in the pocket of you.
The record was good. I'd tell you a story.
Get back to their good graces down here trying to get votes from the table and keep you in L.
Where's Kirk?
Let's look at 852.
No, it doesn't have very good set to you, but 852.
John, will you explain it? This bill has been set for hearing.
852, Madam Chairman?
Yes.
This bill.
I have 853.
No, try 2.
I have 835.
No.
But I have nothing in between.
This bill would allow, say, the trial court in juvenile proceeding to modify its order during the time pending an appeal of that order. If something occurs during that interim time which justifies changing of the order. Yet the background to this is that there's a recent case that's from the Court of Appeals in Oregon in which this occurred. The juvenile court issued an order and one of the parties sought to appeal that have the order modified because of changed circumstances while it was being appealed, and the circuit court ruled that they could not do this.
Changed circumstances based on affidavit, motion, or what?
I'm not sure whether it was affidavit. What it was that there was an order which placed the child in the custody of the state, or made the child a ward of the state. The mother, who was attempting to get the child back from her brother, who made the motion to make the child a ward of the state, brought in evidence from California, where she was then residing, indicating that her household or family there was suitable for the child. And based upon this evidence came to the party who was trying to get the order modified during the time prior to the appeal.
This provides for notice of hearing, anyway.
It's kind of like the federal rule, which permits the federal court to modify its...
There's a change of circumstance, and instead of waiting 9 months for appeal.
I move it out, Madam Chairman. Why do we have to have a hearing?
I would just comment the juvenile judge is asking for this bill.
I think it's a good bill.
Discussion. Clerk call the roll on Senate Bill 852.
Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Kinsman.
Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Senator
Blake. Aye.
Senator Smith.
Aye.
Senator.
Aye. I'll carry that one. Let's try Senate Bill 447.
Keep going like this, we won't have to have any 6 a.m. balloonies.
White nights.
White nights?
Well,
just haven't had any dust. That's how it's done. Speak your mind honestly instead of just trying to be nice to her.
And then we have some members who come in an hour late.
1 hour late.
Which hour was that? Well, first hour or the second hour?
Is there anybody here on 447? Charlie, you're not on this. Dr. Cole testified on the bill. Dr. Trelevin testified on the bill. And the thrust of the bill, John, isn't it that the institution has the authority to release it rather than sending the person?
No, no. This is the one that it requires that a defendant in a sexually dangerous commitment procedure be advised of his right to legal counsel.
There is.
Is there?
Yeah, it's on page 5. In section 5, they repeal the statute which currently would send a motion to discharge a person through the parole board. And in section 7, they allow the superintendent of the state institution that has custody of the person to simply discharge him rather than taking the step through the parole board.
Well, don't they have to go back to the trial court now for commitment for discharge?
I don't believe so. I think, say, upon the recommendation of the superintendent of the state institution, the parole board then makes a decision on it, and they have the authority to discharge them out.
Quite a long picture parole board out, so that's expediting the
cut.
What's your pleasure?
Well, Madam Chairman, I remember in 1963 when we passed the sexually dangerous commitment law, and we had some real difficult times in Multnomah County. I was in the DA's office then. And I remember the pressure by the judges there concerning a judicial termination sometime prior to the release of these people. And in the new code in 1971, we provided that people committed subsequent to an acquittal for insanity reasons go through, rather than have the superintendent discharge them, that they be discharged through the trial court. So I'd like to communicate with Judge Jones, Judge Crookham, and some of my judges and be convinced that they haven't changed their mind on this before I could
could you do that by Wednesday?
Well,
Madam Chairman, does this bill deal with anybody that just those who have been self-committed, or just deal with people who have been court-committed?
No, I'm not sure. It deals with all, as I understand it. Is that right, John?
Yes.
Talks a lot about self-committed, Judge.
Yeah.
That's another change that it does make. It deletes that down on page 2, line 32. At least less than 30 days, nor, which is making it much more flexible to release a person who voluntarily commits himself.
But the whole bill has to do with the people who have sexual problems, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, the world comes superintendent.
Well, his testimony was that several years ago they thought this type of case was incurable,
yes,
and they found that they had could make, or in some instances had made substantial progress.
But he was convicted of a crime, wasn't he?
No.
No?
This is a civil commitment.
Oh.
Do you want to look at 792?
Yeah, did you know that all the time? And that was a civil commitment?
Of course I knew that.
Why'd you pick that up so fast?
Listen, what?
792.
There are amendments in your packet on this bill, and I believe Senator John Burns requested the amendment.
Which one?
This is 792 on the expungement.
We just have amendments, you say?
Yes. Basically, what the amendment would do would apply the new language only to a person who is a first offender. That is, a person who is convicted of a Class A or B felony, and this is his first offense. Whereas the language as it now reads on line 12 of page 2 is simply convicted of a felony. It doesn't limit it to convicted of a felony for the first time.
That's the amendment, huh? That's the only amendment.
I move the amendments.
Amendments have been moved. Any objection to the adoption of the amendments? So ordered.
Yes, thank you. ACLU, right? We didn't do anything about amending.
Five years.
Yeah. Well, I don't see what they want to talk about.
Oh, they're talking about arrest records, and we have another bill on arrest records.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't have anything to do with this, does it? What they're talking about?
No.
This is, we're only talking about after convictions here. I move the bill to the floor to pass recommendation. As amended.
Senator Keith Burns moves it to the floor with a do pass recommendation as amended.
Aye.
Discussion. Clerk Caldwell.
Senator John Burns.
Aye.
Senator Keith Burns.
Aye.
Senator Ivers.
No.
Senator Voight.
Aye.
Senator Smith.
No.
And Chairman.
Aye. Judge Sloan came in support of this, as did Ed Malagon. Carl Frederick from AOI opposed it. As I understand it, it preserves a workman's comp claim after the death of the workman. Are there any amendments, John?
No, there aren't. I don't think I'm prepared to go for it.
Okay. Will you try and get a look at it?
I'm not sure I can go for it either.
Now, 510. John, I understand. John Burns, I understand that you and the ad hoc committee prepared amendments to 510.
We did, Madam Chairman, and the amendments that we agreed upon, and that's, I think, Charlie and Dr. Cole, which I think are somewhat responsive to the concerns that Judge Spencer had, would be to extend the period of commitment from a maximum under the bill of 45 days to a maximum of 180 days. Is that correct, Charlie?
Yes.
And that envisages a number of amendments. The critical point is on page 9, line 13, where the court, where the bill limits the current involuntary commitment period to a period of 45 days. We would extend that to 180 days. And then there would be a number of other changes.
As I remember, at the last time, you amended it to take out several sections.
Well, I did, and then we kind of agreed that we should leave those in. But what I was concerned about was that if we limited the maximum term of commitment to 45 days, then that was in conflict with the 90-day trial visit sort of a thing. So you get a guy, and he goes, and they get him stabilized after 3 weeks, and they permit him to go home on a trial visit. Maybe he's home on a trial visit for 3 months. But if he's in further need of hospitalization, they'd have to go through the commitment proceedings again. Whereas if we'd extend the period of the initial commitment, we wouldn't have to go back through the recommitment proceedings. I think that you agreed, Charlie, and Dr. Cole agreed that this was something of a compromise, and we'd leave these other sections in that would...
Was that former amendment passed that deleted those sections?
No, it wasn't. Okay. So I just moved the amendment.
Well...
And Charlie could help John or Leslie with the specific... there's four or five sections.
The amendments are in your packet,
oh.
But they didn't pretty much what
okay.
Was.
Yes, there should be a letter from Dr. Gray stating what he understands to be the amendments, and those amendments are listed on proposed amendments to Senate Bill 510. Now, the other material in this, in these amendments is simply changing the section numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Senator John Burns moves the amendments created by his ad hoc committee. Is there objection to the adoption of the amendments? So ordered then. Well, just a minute. there was a letter which Jason set up to us from a person who wanted electric shock deleted unless the patient gave permission. And I think that position was espoused by the ACLU. Is that true, John?
Yes, it is.
And did anybody else take that view?
Not to my knowledge.
Does anybody?
Other than that, I don't think they should.
Let me ask a question.
Senator Smith.
Electric shock treatments are determined by the doctor to be the best method of rehabilitation. How is the patient going to know whether or not he ought to have electric shock treatments?
Well, I think it's a strange situation because I think a patient in an institution doesn't have the ability to decide or he shouldn't be there in the first place. in any other situation outside, if the doctor says, I think you better cut off your leg while you're free to go see three other doctors and see if you think so too. but the letter is quite pathetic.
Well, I read the letter, Madam Chairman, but if you're in such a condition as to have a doctor say you must have electric shock treatments, how are you going to be able to determine whether or not you should have them or should not have them? Is the question.
Now, I don't think a person in the institution has any capacity to make.
I don't either. There's a question, you know, about whether electric shock treatments should be given. Maybe you ought to consult with more than one doctor. Maybe that ought to be a provision. But certainly to give the individual the right to make a determination, I don't think he has any capabilities of doing that.
Well, are you here on this?
I'm just here as an observer. I don't.
Okay.
I think maybe a board to make a determination, Madam Chairman.
What would you think of having electric shock by one doctor in this institution and one doctor consulting from outside the institution? Charlie?
I believe that's what the bill provides for, page 16, line 12.
Okay.
Well, I withdraw the motion. Move the bill out. Excuse me, just a minute, please. There are additional amendments here that the committee might want to consider. Three different sets. One is submitted by Dr. Bray, another submitted by Charlie Williamson, and another by the ACLU. Dr. Bray's amendments incorporate Charlie Williamson's amendments as well as the ACLU's, excluding the ACLU's amendment to delete this electroshock area that we just talked about.
What's the thrust of Dr. Bray's amendments?
First of all, it would extend the operative date to July 1, 1974.
Are Dr. Bray's amendments in conflict with the ad hoc committee's amendments?
No, they're not.
What else? Exactly.
The other thing is that it requires when the court makes a determination that a person is mentally ill, that they make that determination beyond reasonable doubt.
Those amendments are in the packet.
Yes, yeah, that's dated April 23rd, 1973.
It extends the date and makes the determination beyond reasonable doubt.
Another provision is that it prohibits the introduction of the report or the recommendation from the psychiatrist in the pre-hearing investigation from being admitted as evidence in the court. This particular suggestion was also made by Jeff Mutnick when he was here.
Excluded from being admitted into what?
I believe it's exclusion from being admitted into court, isn't it, Charlie?
Right, that was something Judge Spencer brought up as well, saying that it would be an invasion of privacy, having the people in your neighborhood investigating your mental capacity without your consent. I think Dr. Bray's amendment does clear up some of that.
One other amendment that they make is that if, say, after a pre-hearing investigation, there's a determination to go ahead with the commitment proceedings, it requires that the person who is sought to be committed be given the chance to come to the hearing voluntarily before police authorities go to bring
the bill. Isn't that in the bill?
It's not in the bill as
talked about.
As it is now, and these amendments would put them in.
Isn't that going to be kind of hard to do practically?
Probably so, yeah.
Charlie?
Yeah, if it will be hard to do, a judge can order a person to be taken into custody immediately.
Is that being noticed here?
Pardon me?
Is it being noticed?
It would be noticed. The situation that you get now is a little old lady was taken downtown at 7:30 in the morning in the bathroom with no prior notice. This would allow situation like that or receive notice and be allowed to show up at the correct time.
I'm curious to know, Dr. Bray's letter here of a month ago about, he objected to this matter about the lobotomy. This is,
that's not before. Is it in these amendments?
No, it's not. I think if Dr. Bray objected to the ACLU's amendment, that there be an exception to the requirement of consent.
He didn't object to this other matter, though, having another doctor.
Did you go and get Ken Kesey to come up here and testify on the lobotomy?
I asked him.
He wouldn't do it, though.
Well,
is he on it?
He was kind of coming
up. He was in his boat.
Senator John Byrne moves Dr. Bray's amendment. Discussion? Clerk will call the roll before Keith Byrne runs out of the room.
Senator Keith Byrne?
Aye.
Senator John Byrne?
Aye.
Senator Ivers?
Aye.
Senator Smith.
Aye. Any more?
No, that's
all. Senator John Byrne moves the bill out to pass as amended. Discussion? Clerk call the roll.
Senator John Byrne?
Aye.
Senator Keith Byrne?
Aye.
Senator Ivers? Senator Boyd?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Sherman?
Aye. Sign it to Senator John Byrne.
I know it. But isn't there a philosophical conflict between permanent or partial total and death?
In neither instance does the death relate to the injury. It's just that the guy had lived, his family would have the benefits of permanent partial disability, or in fact he dies, you know.
You want to take up 668, or are you not ready?
I don't know.
I need to have a mock-up bill because the amendments have been changed.
Okay.
You die.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
But in this bill, you die.
696 is the bill that Grace Peck wants, but I haven't got word from her whether she really wants to go through or whether she's satisfied with the administrative procedure that's now in effect. So I guess we'll hold it. Will you check with Representative Peck, or have you?
I checked with her today, but she had not had a chance to look at the administrative procedure yet.
What's the bill I got in the subcommittee?
It's 171.
Oh, I forgot all that.
You have more than one.
I have more than one.
What else?
410 is the other.
Oh, 410 is in there, too.
I move we accept the report of the subcommittee.
It isn't ready. Let's look again at Fadley's bill, 662. That's his bulk transfer.
That passed, not a German people.
Well, one's is enough, I guess. 792, did we pass on?
791. The committee didn't take any action on that.
I think that's a good bill. Move forward to pass recommendation.
Senator Keith Burns moves Senate Bill 791 to the floor to pass. Discussion? $791, John.
What about a default case?
Well, I suppose as long as you had your opportunity for a hearing, that wouldn't be it.
So after hearing has been.
It'd be a show cause and
I think in a default case, this would arise. You take a default in 10 days, you serve the person in the county, you go ahead and take a default, and then you can go ahead and garnish you. Garnish right there.
Oh, this is, this would permit...
This would only be where they did appear.
Where they did appear,
and they're doing a primary purpose of delay. And when you do this, you have to put up a bond. So if you don't prevail, the person's protected and getting everything back.
And the creditor has, the debtor has to put up a bond?
The judgment creditor has to put up a bond if he gets a writ of attachment and garnishes on it prior to the time that there's a judgment. All right, John?
Well, yeah, but prior to the time that there's a judgment, they have to put up a bond. But the import of this would be not to permit a garnishment until after a judgment.
No.
No?
This is what happened here is that what we've done, we've wiped out our... We can't do anything now because of a Supreme Court decision that says there has to be a hearing to show some validity of the claim before you can get a writ of attachment.
Well,
we don't provide for a hearing at the present time, therefore you can't get a writ of attachment in Oregon now prior to the time of judgment.
I don't think you should be able to. Do you?
Yes.
Yeah,
there's a couple of reasons, John. You take where a person is knows he owes the money, for instance, and it's a great hardship on the person to have it coming, and he just files an answer, this is what Ed testified to, files an answer, general denial, nothing else. Because of the docket, he's off the hook for 6 or 8 months. The other thing is a defecting debtor, where he's going to be leaving. So he can't leave right now. He can stall the thing off until he leaves. Or he can dispose of property. That's the reason for it.
How soon will this hearing be held?
Well, he can't be held before...
$75, I can delay it for 5 months.
I knew that never should have come up.
He has to have a hearing prior to the time that he can get the writ of attachment.
$100 a month.
Well,
but half the price.
Anytime he wants a writ of attachment, you have to set it down for hearing and notify the other side.
Well, I don't know. It looks like there would be a substantial delay between the request for the hearing and the time of the hearing.
No. It would be basically a prima facie case they put on. It wouldn't be perfect to get rid of it.
Take a couple of days or take a couple of weeks?
No. I would think this would be kind of a thing a court would put down ahead of a trial on a particular day or on a motion docket or something like that.
Once a week.
Say it's a good deal.
I think so. I'm generally have the sensitive attitude like you have about these things, that I think it's abused.
Have you moved
to the house? Yes, I moved
to Florida, Patrick. Further discussion.
Well, Mahoney is going to raise hell on this one.
Clerk Paul, right?
No, we'll let him and Paisley fight it out.
I'll vote aye very ambiguously on this.
Senator
Fisher?
Aye. Senator Ivey?
No.
Senator Hoyt?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
No.
Senator Jones?
Aye.
Senator Paisley? In the other book, let's look at 2102.
Meeting this afternoon.
At 4?
Yeah.
2102?
I'm not sure I'm
going to
laugh.
Oh,
it's so hard.
If you have room, it
tables,
we would have room to book slow. You
said a lot of things. 2102?
I can't tell
if
that's going to be
built.
Well,
we're
not so far.
It's our agenda. I've mentioned the order. Go through and then go to the other one.
Well,
not even recorded out, but
I think that's a worthy suggestion. I would recommend that
Mr. DeWitt. Who's that guy, Betty?
I don't know what his interest was. He said he was just a spectator.
He seemed to do all the time.
He had a
better phone. Anyway,
we did whatever he was interested in.
What the hell
is
this?
Well, we didn't have any testimony in this, did we?
No, we didn't have testimony there.
It was set for hearing and nobody showed. It's a bar bill.
There is written testimony in your packet under this from the bar. Basically, it increases the penalties available to a court for a party that refuses to allow another party to discover evidence prior to trial. And
those provisions that they include in this particular bill are portions taken from the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure.
Who's the testimony from, John? The way I feel, Madam Chairman, is that the Bar Committee doesn't have enough interest in gracing us with their appearance. We should just defer the bill until they get sufficiently concerned about it to come back.
Okay, John, will you notify the Bar that the committee plans to take no further action on this bill unless they indicate their willingness to come and testify on it?
Madam Chairman, why don't we just notify them that we'll sit down for hearing, we'd like to have them appear.
No. Notify them there's going to be no further action unless they show up. You said we had some other bills.
Well, what's your lawyer's office about this and nobody saw that?
Oh, yes.
Why do you want to have somebody talk to him to us?
Another House bill that also is from the Oregon Bar, 2101.
That you know as much as I know.
This is a good bill, John.
This
bill
is yours. Bill? John, this is a bill, 2101.
Turn to 2101.
Oh, yeah.
Are there amendments, John?
No, Madam Chairman, no.
This is the one that Austin Crowe and David Landis came on.
I move it out too fast.
Oh, that's a bad bill. How come you won't take action on the good ones and you move the bad?
They appeared on this, and I agree with you about Dave Landis, but...
This is a police disclosure, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's good.
Discussion?
And then I claim this lawyer bill.
Clerk, call the roll. Senator John Brand.
Aye.
Senator Keith Brand.
No.
Senator Rogers.
No.
Wow. Senator
White. Aye.
Oh, Senator White.
Senator Smith.
Aye.
Senator
is this
Smith?
A license to steal?
This is the one Mr. Posey favors.
Posey does?
I got it going.
I assigned it to Senator John Burns.
Oh, wow.
What's the other one, John?
You prefer the sporting theory of justice.
Tom?
Oh, we haven't. There's House Bill 2114 on the agenda that we didn't consider.
I'll go forward on the floor.
2114. This will be abused.
Here's Jack telling us. Somebody telling him I voted the way he told me to. The way you told me he wanted me to.
Please get the doctor to tell him to start this off leaving.
Yeah.
Well,
that's 2114, what's your pleasure?
Oh, it kind of extends jurisdiction on parole, doesn't it?
John?
It simply specifies whom the court may appoint as a supervisor of a person who has been found to be affected by a mental disease or defect or the insanity defense. Currently, the statute does authorize the court to appoint a supervisor, but it doesn't prescribe whom the court may appoint, and this simply does that.
Why can't they? Can't they do it now?
Oh, 5 minutes.
Court shall order release subject to such supervisor orders to the court as are appropriate in the interest of justice and the welfare of the defendant.
It's almost redundant, isn't it?
Seems to me it is.
I'll move out and be passed. If I haven't said it twice.
Senator White moves 2114 out, do pass. Discussion?
I just don't see any need for it whatsoever.
Well, if the preceding language doesn't include everything, I don't know.
Oh, it's good to say it once. Why not say it twice?
So do some of the people we have come before the Senate starts. They could appoint a
the dog.
Discussion. Clerk call roll.
Senator Duncan. Senator Keefe.
No.
Senator Ivey.
No, rule aye. That's not the dismissal, sir.
Senator Blake.
Aye.
Senator Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. What's Fadley's harassment bill? We didn't
vote. That's 554.
That's the other book.
Sorry, boys. We still don't have to go to the book.
Do you want to do anything with all or anything or any part of 554?
It's a good bill.
I think the harassment part.
Do you want to strike the amendment on line 18?
Yeah. I'd move to strike the line 18 amendment.
To strike the amendment on line 18. Is there any objection?
Well, yes. It seems to me, if I may, Madam Chairman, that a person doesn't necessarily, by remaining in a place, doesn't mean that he necessarily knows that drugs are there. It seems to me like after a poor test when a person feels like a crime or not.
Well, Madam Chairman, let me ask you first a question. Well, if you change it and say, or frequency, that means that he has to be there more than once by your interpretation.
Yeah.
And why? And then you would not be able to prosecute him under this statute if he was there the first time and knew, I suppose.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't like remains, but...
That's awkward, I admit. I guess they've been using it. I don't know.
Unusual to have a criminal statute where there isn't required to have knowledge of what's going on.
Well, this presupposes that they have knowledge.
You think it does?
Yeah, and I don't know of any case that's been prosecuted, but I know that it's an effective tool for clearing kids out more than anything else.
I suppose you struck the first R and put a comma after frequency, and after just...
That's what it does.
Strikes out or remains at. I was thinking about leaving it in.
Oh yeah, amendment would restore it.
Well, it says if he knowingly maintains or frequents or remains at a place resorted to by drug users.
Yeah, that's true. You object.
Well, I don't object.
All right. Being no objection, the amendment is adopted.
Then I move it out, do pass it.
Senate Bill 554 is moved out, do pass by Senator John Burley.
I have a question. I wish that the DAs had been here today. I'd like to know if the D that was striking has been used at all.
Well, this has been sent, hasn't it, twice for hearing, John? And the DAs Association, one would assume then, knew and made no attempt to communicate with us.
John, wasn't this the language you put in Senate Bill 4?
Yeah, it was. And I remember in the commission we had some real lively discussion whether we should make it a crime for annoying somebody. And we left it in, but, you know, where this is most often used is where a police officer gets annoyed. And I think that in order to be an effective police officer, you have to have a high tolerance level. And just because I talk back to you and seriously annoy you shouldn't be grounds for you arresting me and putting me in the pokey.
Is that what you're for?
More than anything else.
Further discussion.
I am, yeah.
Well,
cross my heart. Yeah.
I know.
Senator Keefe.
Aye.
Senator Ivers.
No.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Senator Smith.
No.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Senator Keefe.
Meeting's adjourned at 4 o'clock.
Money.
You know, it's 8:05.